So we come to Dr. Whittle.
Swap seats. Are you happy there?
Welcome.
Thank you, Tēnā koutou katoa. I will try to be brief. We've tried your patience quite a lot. I apologise if there is some repetition. Hopefully there won't be too much. So my name is Joanne Catherine Whittle. I live at 10 Kauranga Bunnythorpe Road with my partner Aaron and our two children. As Aaron said, we moved to Bunnythorpe in March 2018, and since then we've worked hard at improving and restoring our section. We've been exploring options for making an income off the section with organic growing of vegetables and cut flowers, and we have also been investing in fruit trees and extensive shelter planting, including native vegetation, to attract more native wildlife to the section and food for bees. And we've already seen a considerable increase in native birds and the number of pollinators on the section. Our family finds great joy and sense of purpose in being out of doors on our section, and we are outside in daylight hours in both summer and winter. We've been welcomed into the Bunnythorpe community, which we've found diverse and supportive. And this was really made evident during the first lockdown and the more recent one as well, when neighbours looked out for each other. We want to stay here for the long haul and to make a productive and positive contribution to our chosen community and to Palmerston North. Our well-being, lifestyle, sense of security and pleasure in our property, which is our biggest and indeed our only financial asset really, and our certainty for the future are all significantly threatened by the proposed freight hub development and associated increase of heavy traffic. And it's not something we could have anticipated facing when we bought into the area. So my written submission addressed my concerns about the inadequacy of the assessment of environmental effects, and I won't repeat those here. I will say, though, that those concerns remain and haven't been resolved by the additional information provided in the Section 92 responses. I agree with the comments of the council officers in the Section 42 report that there is simply insufficient information on the range, magnitude and extent of effects to be able to ensure that they're adequately addressed. But the issues I'm addressing today are the inadequate level of consultation by KiwiRail with the community, so expanding a little on what Aaron has said, the very limited assessment of social impact, and the vague and insufficient conditions proposed by KiwiRail in August. So my first point about consultation with the community and the social impact assessment. So I contend that KiwiRail's consultation with the community about the proposed freight hub development was inadequate, and that this has also had the effect of producing an inadequate and minimal social impact assessment. In the Council's Section 42 report, it was grudgingly stated that consultation had been adequate. I would argue that not only is this setting a very low bar for what can be considered adequate consultation for a local government process, but also that what we should expect from a government-controlled entity and a taxpayer-funded process should be far more than that required to meet the minimal standards required under an RMA notification. KiwiRail should be held to high standards, not the minimal. Consultation with the community of Bunnythorpe and surrounding affected areas should have been exemplary and extensive. This includes not only its responsibilities under the RMA, but under the State-Owned Enterprise Act. And in addition, the designation process is being paid for out of the government's Regional Development Fund, and the purposes of that include, as covered, enabling Māori to reach full potential, boosting social inclusion and participation, and building resilient communities. And it's hard to see how the consultation process could have been said to do those things. So this is a large-scale development with construction over many years and planned to operate and be our neighbours for decades. It involves major impacts on the surrounding community, which KiwiRail's own assessment of environmental effects admits cannot be avoided or fully mitigated. And in addition, many of these effects are still unknown due to the many uncertainties, including the compounding effects of multiple and various activities spread over a large area, all operating at the same time, and many of which are yet unspecified. In addition, the magnitude of these impacts, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in the middle of an existing and long-established neighbourhood, take this activity well beyond the level of consultation and community engagement that might be considered adequate for a new non-complying activity in a rural or residential zone, such as a petrol station or a supermarket. The proposed activity is unusually large in scale, on a par with other major industrial developments such as wind farms, major regional irrigation schemes, even electric power generation schemes. The adverse effects are extensive and severe. So there are many good models of consultation practice that KiwiRail could have used here to make sure that those most impacted were very well informed and enabled to engage meaningfully in the process. There's lots of recent examples of developments designed in partnership with iwi, catchment management and freshwater management processes, rural development initiatives, wind farms and power schemes. The Ministry for the Environment covers good consultation practices on its website, where it recommends that for complex issues, consultation may need to be in multiple stages, accompanied by issues and options papers, which canvass construction, operation and mitigation options before a final option is chosen. Good consultation practice should ensure that the people being consulted have access to full information and a good understanding of the process they are involved in. I believe KiwiRail should have opted for a more collaborative and extensive style of consultation, whereby the local community, which will be expected to bear all the negative impacts of this development for the benefit of KiwiRail's economic development, was enabled to make meaningful changes to the proposed design. Instead, it chose to opt for a minimal approach of informing those who turned up to the small number of public meetings, online Zoom meetings and an interactive map. It did not make sure that it was involving a representative spread of the community, and no trade-offs or concessions were offered beyond minimal changes at the margin. In the forums we attended, information flow was predominantly one way. We listened a lot, and then we got to ask questions in a setting in which many people felt uncomfortable in speaking up. It was very difficult to grasp the full implications of information presented in this way, or even to know how to begin to ask the right questions. One of the meetings was held during the first lockdown, and that further limited the ability of the community to engage. Only those with adequate internet access and the ability to use Zoom were able to attend the meeting, and that I believe that will have excluded people who didn't have those facilities. And there was no need for such haste. This meeting could have been postponed until after the lockdown to ensure the whole community had the opportunity to attend. But more seriously, at the first two public meetings at least, attendees were told more than once that answers couldn't be given to their questions because the location of the freight hub hadn't been decided. And I won't go over that again, but we now know it was simply not the case. The other site options presented to us were therefore never feasible as they lay outside the Cabinet approval. But this wasn't explained to us at those meetings, nor was the key relevance of the Provincial Growth Fund case or approval on the site choice made explicit or even addressed. So this, to my mind, greatly undermines any notion that we were participating in a genuine public consultation process. And it leaves me feeling as if I was being treated like a bit of a fool in those meetings. And it has shaken my previously strong belief that the public consultation provisions in the RMA were something that ordinary New Zealanders could have confidence in or be proud of. It was very difficult for participants in these meetings to get an understanding of the impact of the development. It takes time for those who are not experts to get a real appreciation of scale and impact. It's difficult for ordinary people to grapple with individual issues and specialised data sets. And for a project of this scale, our community really needed to receive large amounts of accurate information over time, presented in such a way that was easy to engage with. In fact, even after the designation was notified, people living near us, who would definitely be impacted by the development, were unsure or confused about the proposal, what it actually meant and how big it would be. In addition, many of these people had not engaged with the community meetings because it wasn't an activity they would normally become involved in, or, as often happens, they were unable to attend meetings in weekdays or evenings, or because they didn't appreciate that the project would indeed impact on their lives. So what was needed here was proactive, iterative and ongoing consultation well before the designation was notified, ensuring that locals were able to engage in ways that worked for them. And it also needed a fully integrated assessment of effects that would allow the community truly to comprehend the multiple and simultaneous effects in combination across a large scale, both in terms of area and time. There was no community survey conducted. There was no comprehensive attempt to understand what we valued about our community or to put together a fully representative view of what locals felt was particularly important about our environment beyond the public meetings. There was minimal visual representation available to us to understand the scale of impacts, and maps were often difficult to read. I think we should have at least had access to three-dimensional models of the proposed freight hub beyond the basic things that we had access to. It would have been good to have extensive modelling and demonstrations of how the freight hub would look and operate, and these could have been provided up front. The little video clip that was available was not at all well tailored to where we actually live, it was very minimalistic. So we could have had open days or open nights in which KiwiRail's representatives could walk over the proposed site with members of the community so we could actually understand what was going on and community concerns could have been exchanged. We also need certainty about the freight hub how the freight hub will be expected to develop over time. So what would happen when, how the site would look and what the effects were likely to be at each phase of the long development and construction period. If genuine engagement could also have given the opportunity for community-supported landscaping or spatial designs that could have been presented with the designation application and therefore resolved many of the uncertainties noted in the Council's Section 42 report. Things like scenarios and simulation models of the options for mitigating effects of noise, light, vibration, etc., should have been presented to us in a way that could give confidence in these measures and enabled us to have some say over what options worked best. This is recommended by Ministry for the Environment as good practice in situations like this for effects that are anticipated to be large in scale and significance, and in particular when robust independent evidence is needed to explain effects to a wide range of stakeholders and affected parties. And this information would have enabled the community, and I believe the panel, to really comprehend acute versus chronic impacts, temporary as well as cumulative effects, and the likelihood and consequence of severe levels of impact sufficiently to determine whether they're acceptable in this or can be made acceptable in this rural and residential environment, and if they can be properly mitigated before the designation is approved, when the community could still have meaningful influence and engagement in the process. I believe that as part of a genuine consultation effort, KiwiRail should have convened the community liaison forum that it's proposing as a condition on its designation beforehand. This could have been convened in advance of the notification, would have been a vehicle for genuine consultation and community collaboration, and given us some confidence that KiwiRail would be a good neighbour. It should have been resourced to enable it to access independent sources of expertise. As individual community members, we can't afford to commission our own noise expert to comment on the information provided by KiwiRail's contracted expert. As the council hasn't sourced independent expertise either, we, along with the panel, are totally reliant on the advice of KiwiRail's expert, which I think is an insufficient basis for making a determination on the effects and mitigation measures of such an important impact here as noise. As a vulnerable and heavily impacted community, we should have been resourced to seek our own independent advice on something so fundamentally important to the ongoing well-being and amenity of Bunnythorpe and its surroundings. So managed properly, a community liaison forum appointed as early as 2018 could have provided the basis for a long-term and more positive relationship with KiwiRail beyond the temporary consultants putting together the documentation to support the formal designation. It could have been a vehicle for KiwiRail to acknowledge the value of the community, of which it's proposing to become a permanent member, and to offer it the opportunity for constructive input, rather than treating locals as an inconvenience or a risk. It would also have enabled KiwiRail to present much clearer information in its application for designation. A more genuine consultation process over an extended period of time would have produced a full social impact assessment rather than the one actually presented, which, as the Council's Section 42 report, Amelia Lindsay's technical evidence, states, does not provide sufficient detail to assess potential adverse social impacts over time, particularly given uncertainty on timing and stages of development. All this information ought to have been available to the panel rather than being left to some indeterminate future evaluation at more of potential effects. A genuine social impact assessment would also have enabled KiwiWell to provide actual evidence or confirm the lack of such evidence for its statements about the potential positive effects of the freight hub, Austin's Section 92 responses. As currently presented in the designation material, these are vague and unsupported claims, particularly the statement that residents will be able to be employed at the freight hub. If they had really come to know the community, they would have been able to understand the complex and varied nature of residents and their skills and expertise, which are no more or less suited for unspecified labouring jobs at a freight hub than any other part of the Palmerston North City Council, city community. I think the same comment applies to proposed positive effects on the quality and amenity of the environment. These unsubstantiated statements could be made of any place or situation in New Zealand and reflect no specific understanding of the Bunnythorpe environments or the needs and concerns of this community. Genuine collaborative consultation actually may have enabled the company to find authentic benefits it could offer the community. And I believe that extensive, open and genuine community engagement was particularly important in this case because of the level to which the Palmerston North City Council and, to a certain extent, Horizons Regional Council are partners in the development. They therefore have, I think, a dual and potentially conflicting roles in the process, both as promoter and as regulator. And I understand that this is not unusual for local authorities to find themselves in this situation, but I think it does put a particular duty of care on the councils to work with the community to ensure that its interests are fully represented and expressed. And I'd like to go further here. I've resided in a number of different urban and rural communities around New Zealand, and I have witnessed or even been involved in resource management and community consultation processes. And I have to say, I've been shocked and dismayed by the callous disregard shown the people of Bunnythorpe. It's hard to find any genuine appreciation of the people or their concerns in the documentation provided by KiwiRail, and the company has shown no inclination to adapt or amend its project beyond the barest minimum. I refer you to the statement on page 11 in the Section 92 response of the social impact assessment. A moderate negative effect on social cohesion is identified. This recognises that the community within the designation extent, which largely consists of rural residential homeowners, will be replaced by an industrial workforce. There may be residents in the vicinity of the site who choose to move because of the changes created by the freight hub. In particular, the demographic profile of the area indicates that residents are typically settled, which means that the displacement of households as a result of the freight hub may result in established families moving or families moving who had planned to be part of the community for a long time. And I have to say it's hard to describe the effect of reading something like that to people who are on the receiving end of these moderate negative effects, so-called, and who indeed intend to be part of the community for a long time. In fact, this reads like a modern environmental injustice in the making. And I don't even think it's going too far to say it sounds like a description of the Highland clearances or the worst of 19th century colonisation. It simply doesn't engage appropriately or fully with the fact that real people and real lives are being impacted here. It seems not just that the people of Bunnythorpe must accept the sacrifice of their environment and well-being, but that the solution to the proposed impacts is that we simply be cleared away. I know some of the people within the designation area who will be forcibly displaced, and my heart aches for their situation. They at least will be paid to move. The rest of us, within the noise impact envelope and impacted by construction and freight road traffic day and night, are also likely to be forced out, as this document makes clear. But we will bear the full costs of this. Our homes will be affected to the extent that we may be forced to move. This is made clear by this statement and by similar statements made in other documents and during the hearings. It seems very strange to have to sit here and say that this is not an acceptable mitigation measure to the environmental effects of the proposed freight hub. And it makes it very clear that the environmental effects cannot be adequately addressed. It also raises very reasonable doubts that KiwiRail will be a good neighbour to those of us who remain here. It gives us no trust that any conditions imposed will be adhered to or that community complaints will be addressed with any real care or consideration for the well-being of Bunnythorpe residents. It makes me fear that Bunnythorpe will become a victim of a neo-think-big approach, and we will be treated like other communities in the past, sacrificed to earlier government-backed think-big projects, such as Huntley or Cromwell, where the true environmental and social impacts were only known once construction was underway or operation was underway, and where local communities faced long and bitter battles to have their reasonable concerns recognised.
I just had a brain freeze when you quoted the document that you were referring to about the Highland clearances. Can you just repeat the quote?
So it's out of, it's page 11 in the section 92 response social impact assessment. I didn't bring it with me, sorry. So the quote was, a moderate negative effect on social cohesion is identified. This recognises that the community within the designation extent will be replaced by an industrial workforce. There may also be residents in the vicinity of the site who choose to move because of the changes created by the freight hub, which means that the displacement of households as a result of the freight hub may result in established families moving or families moving who had planned to be part of the community for a long time. That was my quote. I mean, perhaps you consider it a little emotional to say it sounds like the Highland clearances, but there is definitely a level of callousness in that statement, I believe. On top of that, I'd have to say there's been minimal recognition by the Palmerston North City Council that we are a valued part of the city and that we deserve to have the same levels of amenity and care towards our rural and residential environment as any other part of Palmerston North. Public statements by City Council politicians and officials have treated the freight hub as if it has already been approved, thereby undermining local confidence that the submission and hearing process can have a genuine effect. We had people telling us, oh, we can't fight City Hall. In addition, the focus of such announcements has all been on the economic value of the freight hub to the development of the city, with no public reference or very little made to the fact that one vulnerable section of that city will bear the brunt of all the negative sides of the arrangement. We're expected to pay all the social and environmental costs for the rest of Palmerston North, and I have to say it's been incredibly difficult to get anyone to care about us. The council has known that the rail hub, freight hub will be on the site since 2018, yet there's been no serious attempt by the community, by the council, to work with or adequately resource the community to help us engage with this process. There are many people in Bunnythorpe who have never before engaged in a formal resource management process, made submissions, attended hearings or public meetings. We've spoken to people who simply didn't realise that they could engage in any formal way. Oh, that sort of thing is not for us, they said. I'm not an expert or anything. Well, we thought it was all a done deal. The designation provisions in the RMA are difficult to understand, and getting involved in a formal process is intimidating. I'm not aware of any support or encouragement provided by either the City Council or Kiwi Rail to ensure that locals unfamiliar with resource management processes or the way a designation works were enabled to participate in the formal process. When bringing our concerns to the council, we have experienced a certain level of what I can only call indifference. When speaking to a city councillor some months ago about our fears, he responded with the statement, "Oh, it's just a case of NIMBYism." There was no recognition that we would be dealing with major changes to our way of lives and our community, and the potential diminishment of our ability to enjoy our homes and gardens on a scale far beyond ordinary environmental levels and ordinary levels of change to be expected in rural or residential zones. And I want to talk a little bit about this charge of NIMBYism because I've heard others make this remark in respect of completely legitimate issues raised by Bunnythorpe residents. My first point about accusations of NIMBYism is that it all very much depends on who is supposed to benefit and who is to be burdened as the result of a decision. And I have found those that accuse others of NIMBYism are unlikely to be them that are actually affected by the development in question, but quite willing for others to bear the resulting burden. My second point is that this development is literally in our backyard, and if the noise, glare, vibration assessments are anything to go by, in our living rooms and in our bedrooms too. If approved, this massive industrial development will be a dominating presence in our lives, intruding into our homes and undermining the enjoyment we have in the very place where we have the right to feel secure and relaxed. Therefore, I assert that this development should not be in anyone's backyard. There is no person who would consider the freight hub to be something to be desired or expected next to their homes or intruding into their gardens and backyards, or would choose to have Kiwi Rail's freight hub as their neighbour. To have our legitimate concerns dismissed as mere NIMBYism is callous in the extreme and further adds to my concerns that the interests of the people of Bunnythorpe will not be addressed with any due attention as the various outline plans are developed and the specific effects finally become known. Perhaps a better acronym would be what is known in the international literature of environmental justice as locally unwanted land use, or LULU, a land use that creates externality costs on those living within close proximity. These costs include potential health hazards, poor aesthetics, or reductions in home values. LULUs often gravitate to disadvantaged areas such as lower socioeconomic or politically underrepresented places that cannot fight them off. The definition of a sacrificial zone well applies to KiwiRail's plans for Bunnythorpe, a throwaway community on the wrong side of the tracks with unequal protection in the face of large-scale environmental effects. At a recent long-term planning hearing, the concerns of Bunnythorpe residents were dismissed by councillors without any real opportunity to discuss them. Her concerns were dismissed, and I'm not joking, with a laugh that Bunnythorpe had once long ago been discussed as the location for a railway junction. This prevailing attitude within the council is frustrating and distressing for locals. What might have been considered for our community in the past, and I'm going to mention this because it's also been mentioned at this hearing, what might have been considered for our community in the past, whether 100 years ago or yesterday, is simply not relevant to these proceedings. New Zealand is littered with settlements that have been considered for various possible industries and uses that never went ahead. There are communities within the Auckland city boundaries that were seriously investigated in the 1970s as sites for the construction of a nuclear power station. But no one would expect that history to have a bearing on the choice of a site for a power station today. Bunnythorpe was never a serious contender for extensive rail development in the 19th century. In fact, Palmerston North City Council successfully campaigned to have the railway centred in the centre of the city. So it would perhaps be just as legitimate to argue that on the basis of such historical precedents, the proposed freight hub development would be better located in the centre of Palmerston North Square. Furthermore, as a key proponent and partner in the freight hub development since at least 2018, there is every reason for concern that the City Council has and will continue to place KiwiRail's demands above the interests of the residents of Bunnythorpe. And this is highlighted in the letter from the Chief Planner of Palmerston North City to KiwiRail in April 2020, which you've already seen, that consistent with the agreement between Palmerston North City Council, KiwiRail and NZTA, I want to ensure Palmerston North City Council is doing everything it can to support KiwiRail with the designation and subsequent development of the freight hub. And as already noted by Aaron, the words from the same letter, in the interest of managing the risks posed by other landowners and stakeholders. So the risk here is us, the residents of Bunnythorpe. Rather than assuring itself that KiwiRail is acting within the scope of its requiring authority status, the council here seeks reassurance in order to promote the interests of KiwiRail in light of the very ratepayers and citizens whose environmental quality it has a duty to protect. So I urge the panel to recommend that the application for designation should be withdrawn on the basis of an inadequate consultation with the community and an inadequate assessment of social impact. KiwiRail should go back to the beginning of the process and commit to engaging in a meaningful way with the community, even before thinking of notifying any future designation for a freight hub. And that applies to Bunnythorpe or to anywhere else that might want to do this. Just my last point is about the proposed conditions, and I know that our council has covered this quite a bit already. In my submission, I requested that the designation be declined on the basis that the environmental effects are not sufficiently known and that those that are identified cannot be adequately avoided, remedied or mitigated. After reading the additional information provided by KiwiRail in its Section 92 responses, I'm still of this opinion. My submission asks that should the designation be approved, it should only be done so with strict and monitorable conditions applied at the time of approval. Now, I've looked at the proposed conditions provided by KiwiRail in August, and I've the latest version, or the one that our council also had, and I still find them to be inadequate and vague. They don't address the full range of activities that KiwiRail proposes to include in its designation. And I argue that the conditions do not provide sufficient certainty that the multiple and extensive effects of the freight hub, individually and in combination, can be appropriately mitigated to make this development appropriate in a rural and residential zone, and I ask the panel to recommend the designation be withdrawn on the basis of inappropriate and unmitigated environmental effects. I do have some specific concerns about the proposed conditions. The main one is that most of these are not actually conditions at all. They're a to-do list. They relate to information. What information must be provided after the designation is granted, when we can no longer have any impact on the process? And they do not actually set enforceable limits or substantive controls on activities. They fail to define or bound the scope of activities, and they do not set clear parameters for enforcement. They do not provide certainty that environmental effects will be managed by setting outcomes, requirements, or limits to activities, and they don't specify how these are actually achieved. They do not internalise the environmental effects of the activities on the site. They allow the externalisation of many of these effects to the detriment of the surrounding residents, without any clear recourse for those residents, and without attempting to avoid, remedy, or even mitigate many of these effects. Some of the conditions are simply about providing information to unspecified parties about when activities or effects will take place, not how they will be controlled to ensure the effects are managed appropriately. And as noted by Ms. Tancock, the proposed conditions contain many terms that add to uncertainty, as far as practicable, where things are not unreasonable, where they might reasonably be expected. These make for unclear, uncertain, or unenforceable conditions. The conditions regarding the construction management plan is just one such example of what I'm concerned about. The construction impacts, as discussed in Kiwi Rail's assessment of environmental effects, are likely to be widespread, major and varied, including noise, dust, vibration, glare and light spill over many years. Specific, monitorable and enforceable conditions are needed to ensure that these effects can be appropriately remedied, avoided or mitigated. And the conditions in that section, conditions 57 to 59, do not achieve this basic level of a condition. Instead, Kiwi Rail is suggesting that it does many of things after the designation is approved that should have been done before it was notified. That is, to provide details of the site layout and describe measures to avoid, remedy or mitigate adverse effects of construction. The proposed conditions are based on a limited knowledge of the activities that may take place on the site. The focus of the consultants' reports, and which serve as the basis for the conditions, focus on the range of activities associated with Kiwi Rail's core business as a network utility operator. They don't address the proposed activities beyond the scope of Kiwi Rail's core business, the rail-connected and non-rail-connected freight forwarding facilities, the warehousing. We do not know what these activities are, nor what their environmental effects are likely to be. There's no certainty about their scale, their hours of operation, what products and substances may be stored or used. This means it's simply not possible to know whether these conditions will avoid, remedy, or mitigate these effects, the effects of these activities. So I think that given the very high level of uncertainty about the effects of unspecified activities, it's not possible to feel confident that the conditions are appropriate. It's unreasonable to expect the community to accept such a level of uncertainty and doubt. Now, I understand under the RMA that a designation can be approved on the basis of a general outline of proposed activities, with details then confirmed through outline plans. And there's a place for consent conditions that provide for the preparation of management plans. However, these should only provide a way to identify what steps are to be taken to ensure that specified outcomes, standards or limits set in the conditions at the time the development is approved or achieved. Management or outline plans cannot be a substitute for conditions that set the standards necessary to ensure environmental effects are kept at an acceptable level. In the case of a designation, relying almost totally on such post-approval plans could only be considered reasonable in cases where the scope of activities is tightly bounded, and where, therefore, the range of effects can be reasonably expected to be known in advance, and only minor details need to be addressed through the management plans. This is the only way that such a wide latitude could be given to addressing potential effects. To allow such latitude in this case, when the activities are much broader than the strict limits of the scope of the status of the requiring authority, makes a mockery of the RMA process and leaves the community at the mercy of unknown levels of effects arising from future unspecified activities occurring at many points over many years. To allow this degree of latitude, I think, would set a dangerous precedent for other requiring authorities and would allow those enterprises an advantage not enjoyed by private sector companies or individuals, namely to be able to submit applications for consent for unspecified future activities when with unknown and undefined environmental effects and leaving the provision of appropriate and necessary information until after the consent has been granted. The designation should therefore be withdrawn, and in the event that it was ever resubmitted at a future date, then it must be supported with adequate information on the range of activities that will take place in order that substantive and enforceable conditions can be set. My third point is that the proposed conditions do not include any limits on hours of construction and operation of the freight hub. Given that the major adverse effects from the freight hub directly derive from the proposed 24-hour operation, one of the most appropriate and straightforward ways to avoid these effects is to limit the hours of construction and operation. There is nothing in the submitted information that justifies the case for 24-hour operation or construction. It's been stated both in the designation information and during the hearings that most of the time there will not be a need to operate over the 6/10 period. I note the statement in the Council's Section 42 report that the acoustic assessment considers that it is practical for construction works to be undertaken during daytime only, and that to remove any doubt, these hours of construction activity should be included in a condition. It is unclear what operational activities are planned to take place at night or in the weekends, including whether this option will extend to any unspecified activities around those rail-connected or non-rail-connected freight facilities. Should the panel decide to recommend that the designation is approved, I request that conditions be included that limit the hours of construction and operation of the freight hub to normal business hours 5 days a week. This would help deal with some of the adverse effects of the proposed freight hub and perhaps would help ensure this activity is less inappropriate for this residential and rural environment. My fourth point is that the timeframes referred to in the conditions and in all the materials submitted with the designation are vague and uncertain. For a project of this magnitude, the lack of uncertainty is highly unsettling. Kiwi Rail has not made it clear when their construction phase ends and the operational phase begins. Given that different types of effects can be expected from each of these phases, the periods of time and range of activities covered by each should be confirmed before appropriate corresponding conditions can be set. In my fifth point, I have considered the proposed conditions for noise levels during daytime and at night. Now, I'm not a noise expert, and as the community has not been provided with any actual demonstrations of what the impacts of these levels might sound or feel like, I cannot state whether or not they're appropriate. Neither can I say whether the number of monitoring stations is appropriate or whether the proposed bunds and barriers will in practice ensure that noise limits can be met. I'm concerned that the only noise assessment we have is that provided by the applicant by way of a commissioned consultant. I'm not questioning the qualifications or sincerity of the consultant, but I do seriously doubt how limits and other conditions could be established without the benefit of other independent expert advice before the designation is accepted. My sixth point is that the proposed noise levels are not enforceable conditions, and Ms Tangott's covered this already. It's hard to understand what they actually are. They're described as limits, yet there are clauses that allow them to be exceeded without any recourse. And as Ms Tangott pointed out, proposed construction noise 71A is a good example. Nighttime construction work that exceeds the noise limits specified in Table 1 shall only take place if the works cannot be practically undertaken during daytime hours. It's totally unclear how this will be determined or by whom, and it provides no certainty on what levels these limits could be exceeded by. There's no maximum here. There's nothing to enforce here because there's no limit to be exceeded. They don't avoid, remedy, or mitigate the adverse noise effects of the proposed activity. In the absence of independent advice and given the lack of information about the full range of activities on the site, I'm very concerned that the proposed conditions will not provide adequate mitigation. I'm also concerned about the possibility of unexpected and compounding effects from many individual noisy activities operating together and the high risk for combined and unanticipated negative effects that mean the freight hub is unable to meet any noise conditions, even if limits are set at this stage. The construction noise limits are almost identical for weekday and weekends and make no allowances for the fact that this is a quiet neighbourhood during the weekends, particularly on Sundays. The upper limit for night time is very little lower than daytime, so it's unclear how the noise limits would be enforced, especially when they're exceeded at night and during weekends. How are neighbours expected to deal with situations where construction noise appears particularly loud in the small hours of a Sunday morning? Many of these issues would be resolved quite simply by limiting construction to normal working hours during weekdays. The proposed operational noise levels, Section 85, appear to make no distinction between weekends and weekdays. It is reasonable that lower noise levels be expected during weekends, and any conditions should reflect that. Given the uncertainties over what activities are going to take place on the site and the additional uncertainty around when construction activity will be said to be finished and operational activity begin, it's simply not possible to set noise conditions. Some of these issues would be resolved by limiting operation of the freight hub to normal weekday working hours and making it a condition that activities do not take place during weekends or at night. Overall, I reject the operational noise limits proposed in the conditions. The freight hub is proposing to locate in a residential neighbourhood, and therefore the operational noise limits at the boundary should be appropriate and normal in a residential zone, and they should be enforceable upper limits that internalise the noise effects of the freight hub within the boundaries of the freight hub and allow for straightforward enforcement if they're exceeded. I've also heard discussions during this hearing to the effect that current residents who find noise unbearable to the extent that their quality of life is diminished often move out to be replaced by new people who complain less, presumably because they have no choice but to accept a compromised environment. This attitude is really disturbing and leaves me very uncertain about the value or effectiveness of any or all proposed noise conditions. It assumes, firstly, that we can find someone willing to buy our homes when the impacts become insupportable, and B, that it is quite satisfactory for incoming residents to suffer low levels of amenity or environmental quality. I find it alarming that we even have to say that a level of negative environmental impact so severe that people will be unable to live under them and will be forced to leave their properties is not appropriate or acceptable as a mitigation measure under the RMA. My final point is about the proposed community liaison forum, which is weak, and the communication is very much one way and entirely at KiwiRail's discretion. As I've already said, the appropriate time to establish a community forum was before the designation was notified. I note that the proposed forum is to be maintained until at least 6 months after the commencement of operation of the freight hub. It should not be up to KiwiRail to decide when the forum is no longer needed. This should be a community decision. As KiwiRail is proposing to be a permanent part of the community, there's a good argument that the forum should continue throughout the period of operation. It's unclear how it will be set up to ensure it is representative of those most affected, nor how these people will be encouraged and enabled to participate. How its membership will be decided is not clear, nor how it will engage with KiwiRail beyond working through the single community liaison person. The role suggested for the community forum is limited in its ability to influence the design, construction and operation of the freight hub. What is proposed, I would have to say, is no more than a tick box exercise of least possible value to the community and least possible inconvenience to KiwiRail. To have any meaningful engagement at all, the community forum should be resourced to work with KiwiRail, to have regular and ongoing access to senior KiwiRail staff, to engage its own expertise, and to have the opportunity to influence KiwiRail's plans and operation in ways that are positive for the community. At the very least, it should be given the same level of engagement and influence as that proposed for Mana Whenua in Section 32. Now, I could say much more about the proposed conditions for light and glare, dust, traffic effects and much else, and I could say much more about the lack of a full assessment of environmental effects and sufficient information to ensure these can be mitigated or otherwise dealt with appropriately. However, I think, as Aaron has already pointed out, that one of KiwiRail's own representatives sums it up much better than I can, and I refer you back to that 9th of August quote by Olivia Poulsen, that freight hubs don't belong in the middle of cities. If they don't belong in an industrial zone near the centre of Palmerston North, then they're equally inappropriate in any rural or residential area of the same city. I therefore request that the panel recommend that QUL withdraw the designation on the basis that it is inappropriate in this rural and residential environment and on the grounds that the effects cannot be appropriately avoided, remedied or mitigated in such a way as will make it appropriate in this location. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Pamari.
Tēnā koe, Dr. Whittle. Ngā mihi nui ki a koe, tēnei wā. Can I take the opportunity to reiterate my comments to Dr. Fox and thank you also very much for your submission today, and particularly your views and insights around the consultation process and the conditions, which I found really helpful. I do appreciate the huge amount of time and effort that has obviously gone into producing such a comprehensive and heartfelt submission. And I also appreciate the toll that this process must be taking on your lives as members of a fairly close-knit community, it seems, who are directly affected by this proposal. So I really wanted to acknowledge that and to acknowledge that you've both certainly given us plenty to think about, and I thank you for that. I have no additional questions for you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Commissioner Mackinson.
Good afternoon, Dr. Whittle. I would just like to add that you have been most eloquent today, so I also have no questions for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Sweetman.
And the same for me. Thank you very much, Dr. Whittle, for obviously all the time and effort that you've put into preparing the submission. I assume you will make your written notes available to us, because certainly you traversed a whole range of issues, and it would be particularly helpful if we could have those. Same with yours, Dr. Fox. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, and I'd just like to say thank you very much. I don't have any questions, because I think it was very clear. But I suppose the observation I would make is that as a long-term resident of the Manawatū, it's probably true to say that I don't know a lot of people from Bunnythorpe, and it's a somewhat enigmatic community. To my eye, because I don't know them, but it's quite evident that you've actually rooted yourself in that community very powerfully over a relatively short period of occupation, and the fact that you've committed so many resources to its protection, I think, shows that you've obviously found a community that you really love. So that sort of is a reflected glory for the community, because it speaks to the depth of it, and we'll have to, we definitely are going to have to work through these issues very carefully. So at multiple levels, I found it enlightening to hear you, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So that concludes that part of the hearing that relates to submitters. And in due course, we will move to the council's evidence and case. And we have dates allocated for that. My only request is that when we do have that, we have advanced notice of who is coming on particular days, so that we can do some internal preparation in anticipation of that, because this is such a monster, we have to keep on going back and refreshing our memory. So unless my other commissioners have any other questions, I will bid you farewell, and I look forward to coming back to hear the council's case. Thank you very much.